Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hello, everybody.
In my actual person, and Josh Brown.
This is Jules Gill.
Apparently.
Oh, my God.
He's not been here in a while, 2 years.
So we are thinking about this. The last time the three of us made a piece of content may have been 2019, pre-pandemic. But now I am preying all over the place, my friends, to see you here.
The pre-sesh. I have a feeling that maybe it was the start of 2020, but either way, it's been a lifetime. We've been through a lot of stuff since then.
It's quite interesting because it's like having Scott and Josh's combined shadows cast over me is lovely. It feels like I'm standing within like a healing ray of sunlight, like from a video game. I feel like I'm being rejuvenated in ways that have not been felt
in a long time.
That's because you're the Superman of the content, right?
Oh, kryptonite! Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Doesn't that mean we kill him?
No, because there's good.
Oh, is there good kryptonite?
Well. If we're in the shadow, well, I don't actually know. I didn't think this analogy through.
It sounded good.
Yeah.
It sounded like
a compliment, and now I'm realizing might not be.
No, no. What we say is, I'm Superman. Thank you very much.
Yes.
You boys are the biggest sons because your big beaming face has given me life. And kryptonite is the fact that I've only just had a few sips of coffee and I need to finish it off.
You might get steadily more shaky as the podcast goes on.
Oh, I will indeed. We have one heck of a podcast in front of us today, my boys.
So a few weeks ago was last time you were up and we tried doing this then, but technology just would not play with us whatsoever. Sadly, Josh, your partner came down with COVID. The universe got in the way, and so we had to reschedule until the next time Jules was up.
That was the kryptonite.
Which is today. That was the real kryptonite. So we have a whole bunch of questions that people submitted for that podcast that I wanted to keep until we were together again. So we got through a selection of them, but there were always a bunch more to get through. So first question from Schmance Schmilliamson, who says, what's your favorite fast food / chain pizza place? Mine is Burger King and Pizza Hut, if only to say pizza slut. To say that they are pizza slut. I'm sure there are differences between the US and the UK. Now, I've not heard pizza slut before, but I did have a Pizza Hut the other day, and it made me feel like a six-year-old again. Not in a good way.
See, Pizza Hut, I always find, like, if I wanted to go under my kitchen sink and grab a cleaning sponge and cover it in tomato paste, then I would go to Pizza Hut.
The one that I got a barbecue chicken pizza. I've not had a Pizza Hut in years. I don't know when the last time I had one, 15 years ago or something, but I didn't want another Domino's and I didn't want another local pizza because I've tried too many local outlets and around my parts, they weren't that good. Mm. So I thought I'll get something else that's like mass produced by a company. I'm sure it'll be great. And so I got a pizza. That thing felt like a piece of clip art. Like it was just sort of like it had been 3D printed. Like it was the most plastic bit of pizza that I've ever had. Pizza do chips and chicken bites and stuff now?
Stay away. It's a bad time.
Like, just
I don't want to have anything potato microwaved. Like, get it out of there. Like,
nobody likes a soggy potato wedge. Oh. One of the worst things to get from any fast food joint, I think.
Talking about that is giving me a soggy potato wedge.
I'll tell you what, though. I've got to say, guys.
Go on.
I discovered Pizza Hut pizzas in lockdown because I used to be a Domino's.
Are you
going to
class like us this and invert this?
I am. I really am. I was waiting. I was biding my time.
He was
this.
A Domino's guy, you know what I'm saying? Domino's.
I was a Domino's guy, and then you, Jules Gill,
introduced
me to the Papa John's.
R.I.P.
Yeah.
R.I.P.
And then none of those would do it for me, so I just tried Pizza Hut in the lockdown, and for me, they do the best pizza of their kind because I'm a stuffed crust guy. Their garlic stuffed crust
I'm looking confused at you, Josh Brown.
Eons better than Domino's or Papa John's or anything else in that sphere.
I have to concede on that
If Pizza Hut still did their cheeseburger stuffed crust, maybe I'd be with you.
No, that's an unholy abomination.
That was a hell of a time. Remember when they did the popcorn chicken pizza as well, that combined with their KFC? I don't know if they did it in the US.
Was this in the weird sort of timeline where we were getting stuff like the KFC did that burger where the bun was made of extra chicken? You know,
Hot Stopper. No, that was from a few years ago. That was the Oreo pizza as well.
An Oreo pizza?
Oh, yeah, yeah. A dessert pizza. It's like a giant sort of creamy Oreo thing. I think you can still get that in the US. But there was a crossover, Pizza Hut and KFC, and I think 2020, like it was a pandemic thing. We all tried it. I don't know if you got one.
I remember you getting into the office. I wanted to try it, but...
It was limited edition. I got like two or three in that one week when it was available. It was literally just put popcorn chicken on a pizza. That was all it was. But that was like a stunt food. But overall, I can't believe you would say Pizza Hut stuffed crust is better than...
100%. No, I actually agree with him there.
Really?
Like, well, I do not like the pizza pies from Pizza Hut. I do remember back before I was vegan that the cheese stuffed crust there was a thing of beauty because it's so thick. It pulls apart it's that perfect meltiness where it's like, yeah, you're chewing a bit of rubber, but at the same time, that rubber is so well seasoned.
You know when you get
so salty as well. You're like,
you get like the inside of a tire and it's like that like rubber hose loop.
Yeah.
That's what a cheese
it's
pizza
the door sealant thing. Like,
listen, if it had the secret 8 herbs and spices on it, I would probably taste delicious as well.
Well, I wish it did, but sadly, the pizza I had didn't live up to its lofty name that I'd established when I was 6 years old.
I want to throw something out right now.
Here we go.
Of the opinion that pizzas don't need any toppings. You can get a straight up margarita and that'll do you. Any other topping is additive and, in my opinion, opulent.
I'm saying that sometimes cheese is too much, mate. When I went to Venice, there was literally nothing that me and my girlfriend could eat because
just tomato
it's like,
paste.
They're just kind of like, hey, vegan, what's a that sort of thing. So I apologies exactly to any vegan from Venice out there. What's a that? They basically were like, we can only do you like marinara pizzas, and I was like, absolutely fine. But then they seasoned it so well, like the sauce was impeccable, like the fresh basil that was on top of it as well. Mm. They were like oregano or oregano, depending on which part of the world you're from, over the top of that. And I was like, hot damn, there's nothing on this pizza, and yet I love it. It's so good.
That's the gift of a good pizza person. Speaking of which, most of the pizza connoisseurs that I know, shout out to Adam Cleary and James Hunt, have also said the margarita life is the way to go. But if you're going to a fancy pizza place, as much as I don't mind a marge, I would always get some sort of topping. So anything, so that I'm not getting the same basic thing over and over again.
For the second outing there.
Right.
I always, for me, just my personal rule, try to sample the margarita first,
it's
then you get
a baseline.
Just get two pizzas.
Anyway, the actual question was, what's our favorite fast food / chain pizza place? I'd probably just go KFC. I like fried chicken so much that I want fried chicken on my doorstep as much as possible, so I default to KFC, but I eat McDonald's way more frequently, so it's kind of just those two. And then I guess Dom's would be in there because I have so much Domino's, but they're not good. Like, they're fine, but...
My one would be my fast food, and I was going to ask if this actually counts. Greg's?
I love Greg's.
Because there's nothing I don't like from the Greg's range. Mm. Like, the stuff they do, sausage rolls, banging. That cheese and bean roll thing they do, bang in. And then
bang it in.
Eventually, once they finally realize that you can have vegetarian or vegan bacon and sausages, do me a sausage and bacon back, please. Yep. That's all I'm asking for.
Vegans eat breakfast too.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. Don't just subsist off of moss from the underside of rocks
anymore.
The sun comes up. And if I was going to go for my favorite pizza one, I got to go with the Papa. The Papa's a big popper.
Cheeky Papa.
I mean, like, all of his personal issues aside, his pizza pies are...
it's not him actually making the pizzas.
I know, but there's an image. He's so everywhere. He always was, at least for a while, that it's hard to separate the art from the artist, as it were. But I enjoy his vegan range because they do extra things like Marmite and vegan cheese scrolls. And I'm like, the word scroll and food immediately piques the hipster in me because it's like, it's not a book. It's not a ledger. No, it's a scroll, damn it. Let's
unfold. It's a pickup in a fantasy game. Josh, what's the best?
McDonald's. McDonald's through and through. The amount of Uber Eats I have bought.
You'll have a McDonald's for an evening meal sometimes.
Outrageous. Yeah, McDonald's for an evening meal. The double quarter pounder with fries and then a drink and then 20 chicken nuggets on the side will do you for an evening meal.
Well, you say that, but are you not hungry in about 20 minutes afterwards?
Honestly,
I find it goes right through me in every sense.
As long as I have those added chicken nuggets, I'm okay. If I just
20
have the
nuggets
meal,
is a lot. Actually, I just clocked on that. That's a lot of like.
I love the 20 on the side.
Chicken in that. Like,
there's a lot. And the double quarter pounder is quite, it's a hefty burger, you know, it's not just the regular Big Mac. But I would have the whole range and then pizza, of course, Pizza Hut.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to any place that's doing Neapolitan pizza, an actual well-made pizza that's not just churned out like a Dom's, like a Pizza Hut, somewhere where you can sit down for an evening meal.
And if you're nice in pizza. The Newcastle or Gateshead area and yes. run a pizzeria, please feel free to invite us to sampling sessions, because we will gladly show up.
Jules
and
is only
food.
Up for the next 24 hours.
But I will market the hell out of it, mate.
Yeah, yeah, if we can get it in. Okay, actual gaming questions. Next one from the legend of Matt. Actually, no, I lie. Next one from Nod Dog, who says, the holy trinity of war culture in one room. What a sight to behold. I know. I was playing games with my little brothers yesterday, and all they care about are the battle royales and the games with the instant gratification. How do we get the younger generation to appreciate single-player story-driven games?
That's such a tough one, because in order to have a good story, I argue that you have to, like, a slow burn is really important to the great stories. Mm. However, as was proved with God of War 2018, opening with that amazing fight sequence,
yes.
that hooks you. So I do feel that there is a way of engaging your audience straight away with an interesting either world plot device or something like that, and a banging first boss battle. Because it's like the amount of times that Scott and I go on about Vanquish, it's mainly because of that first boss battle is outrageously good. Same with Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
More games where you can uppercut a head off.
Yeah, same with Devil May Cry 5. Like, yeah. It's like you start with epic encounters and that really hooks you in.
Mm.
But some games, they miss the boat on that and they just go, oh, let's do a 30-minute tutorial. Oh, do you know how to jump yet? Yes, I bloody know to jump.
Look left, then look right. Look up and down, invert.
Exactly.
I think for God of War's an interesting one for the younger generation, because I wonder if they would just default associate more with Atreus, or like just not, like obviously for anyone who's grown up with that series, you tend to look at Kratos and look how far he's come and everything else. And obviously he is the protagonist. But yeah, I wonder for the Fortnite Battle Royale crowd, like what is their nearest analog for something that is still that immediate and still has that competitive element, but still has a narrative backbone.
Mm.
Like that is a lot harder to put together. But I mean, things like Avengers have tried, where it's like, here's a big single player campaign, but also you can play it four people co-op or whatever. I would just hope that the value of those stories is in there regardless. Like if you gave a kid Horizon, I think they, I mean, I don't know if you actually can, maybe Horizon's 18 years old, but I feel like Horizon's enough in Horizon. Aloy's very well written. The whole world is so cool. I think if I was a kid, I'd be fascinated by all the robots and everything. So I'm like, those hooks might get you in. And then there's enough narrative world building that would keep you there.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think it's for me, it's the world building first and foremost. I think that Scott touched upon there, because I remember when I was young, and I don't know how young your brothers are, but when I was like first getting into games and getting my brother into games, I didn't care about the stories. You know, I liked the world. Mm. I liked the look of Crash Bandicoot. I liked the mythology of the Crash Bandicoot lore. You know, that was the stuff I was getting into, not the beat for beat storytelling. And I think as long as you have an affinity for the worlds that you are occupying, the affinity for the stories will come later.
That's a good point.
If you love like the world you're inhabiting, even in Fortnite, you know, that there's some storytelling within that in terms of like the big events that happen, you know, at the end of every season or whatever. If you have a fondness for that, I think the fondness for the actual beat for beat character arcs in something like God of War will eventually come the older you get and the more you become, like, understand them, because a lot of these narratives nowadays, I don't know about you guys, but I wouldn't be able to grasp them when I was younger.
Nope.
Even if I was a young teen, you know, I wouldn't get the intricacies
of
a lot of these themes, and a lot of that comes with age. So I think it is, as long as you have just kind of like a fondness for the characters and the worlds, the rest should come, hopefully.
Crash is interesting, because I'd never even thought about that's, it's just a good versus evil, you're Crash, that's Cortex, go fight.
It's interesting, because it's like you say here, the ones that we think of being some of the best gaming narratives, really complex, quite deep, very long form, like Final Fantasies and stuff like that. But there needs to be an entry point, like you say, the Crash Bandicoots. There needs to be simple stories, but just told really well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really struggling to think of what that is in the
to
current
be fair,
game,
though, like those,
gaming industry.
Those older Final Fantasies, like Final Fantasy VII, like I can't think off the top of my head what those age ratings are, but I feel like, I mean, Final Fantasy VII, I played that when I was like, when I was seven.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
so
yeah,
I'm just
yeah.
like, I feel like those games, because they're text-based, they're quite cutesy, art style-wise, you could give them to a kid as long as they're competent, happy enough reading
it's
everything.
It's quite complex. I was going through the original, like before I went through the remake again, because I got it on the PS Plus dealio. It's like, there is so much text that is like, oh, you know, we need to take down this corporation. Like, it makes sense in that opening section. Like, here's the bad guy, well established. But the amount of dialogue that goes on between them, I'm like, oh, this is actually going to be paid back quite like a lot later.
Yeah,
these conversations that we're having right here. And it's like, oh, this is quite a lot. This
phenomenal.
Lot, like.
I mean, obviously, there's that weird, the fact that it was translated by one dude really starts to show up later, because all the Sephiroth stuff just doesn't make sense.
Mm.
But, like, overall, all the environmentalist messages, and there's a maturity to that script that you just didn't get when you were a kid, because you're just like, I'm a guy with a big sword fighting the evil corporate man. I think that I still would champion giving a new generation games like that. I mean, even Not as, I don't know, for me, I just prefer the Final Fantasy VII original to the remake in regards to accessibility of an age range or whatever. But I still think there's enough stories in those old games that you could still lead with that stuff.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm thinking of like, you know, Metal Gear Solid 1 and 2. I played those to death when I was little. I watched my dad play Metal Gear Solid 1 because I was a bit too young for it. Kept getting killed over and over again. Kept getting seen. Why is this not an action game, I thought. But even Metal Gear Solid 2, which I loved and played to death, would play it over and over again. Mm-hmm. Like some of those cutscenes, I didn't watch until I was like 18 years old.
Did you skip the
cutscenes? Because I would skip them. Because some of them, for a 12-year-old mind,
they were long,
too boring, and I didn't care what was going on in that final scene between Raiden and Snake.
All the documentary footage.
All the documentary footage, you know, just people walking by. I thought, this is not what I play this game for. Mm-hmm. It was the characters, it was the likes of the bosses and all of that stuff. Like, I think if you can get someone interested in the core of a story, they will just naturally, with age, enjoy the deeper meaning. So I would do agree with you that you could give someone Final Fantasy VII and they could enjoy the characters, they can enjoy like the base part of it, and then later we'll be like, there's so much extra stuff here.
A small piece of advice I would give as well to anyone out there with younger siblings: don't actually have a go at them for enjoying the likes of the Minecrafts and the Fortnites and these sort of things. Yes, they may not be the grandest in terms of like scope and scale for like narrative perspectives, but if you go up to somebody and say that game is dumb, you're actually like pushing them further towards that game, because they're going to be sort of like, well, I'm just going to hang out with my dumb friends playing this dumb game and not enjoy what you have to recommend.
Plus, like, that is their Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
In as much as like, you know, like it's a big cultural touch point for that age group. Like, I mean, I've like said to probably both of you guys over time, like, it must be so awesome to be the right age for Fortnite right now. Yeah. Like, I'm not that you can't enjoy it when you're older, but if you were in like school and everyone's playing, everyone's reacting to those end of season events, like that must be so much fun.
As much as we hate, right? Like, those are the stories of people who were into that game. Yeah, like, I would love, genuinely, every single time like an event like Galactus comes up or whatever, and people are like, you know, friends are jumping on together to experience this limited timed event or whatever, I wish I had those stories. Yeah. And these are the stories that, you know, younger kids are getting now that they will remember when they're our age and doing podcasts.
Absolutely.
And
you
know, it also might get them into other IPs, because it's like loads of people I saw online when they did the Dragon Ball crossover event recently. Mm-hmm. It was just like loads of people being like, what is Dragon Ball? Like the younger kids. And they've gone on to find games like FighterZ and like all of the Kakarot games.
But I love as well that like there's an island in Fortnite where you can just sit and watch episodes with your friends who are also logged in. I was like, that's brilliant. Like, I mean, I love that. Like, I get that it's a marketing tool. The only reason that the Dragon Ball thing exists is because the new movie's out, but it's done so well. Like, it almost got me downloading Fortnite again, and I had a word with myself and didn't do it, but I almost did. And I'm on like a massive Dragon Ball binge at the minute anyway. So yeah, I think just kind of go down the route that we did if you want to test the waters with older games that had more narrative backbones to them anyway. Or I guess I would kind of just have a conversation with someone who's a hardcore Fortnite player of that age and be like, what do you like the most about it? Is it the big event stuff? Is it the characters? Okay, well, this character was from this and this is this whole world, and go down that route. Or maybe it is just the competitive side of it. Next question from Jack Asbury, who says, hey lads, good to have you all back in one room. When you guys get together, what's your favorite thing to do? Also, a gaming question, has there ever been a game that you really enjoyed but felt like you couldn't recommend to others?
So the answer to the thing that is our favorite thing to, so I said pints. I mean, we just have a few jars, mate, and just shoot the whatever.
It comes in pints.
Specifically in Dapba, nowhere else. It's like, it's always Dapba.
That's what we're going for food then.
We haven't
been there. And
shout out to Dapba in Newcastle upon Tyne. That is a hell of a restaurant.
After the pandemic, it just didn't feel right going there anymore. It felt like something about the fabric of it. Jules had moved away. You know, everyone was like, you know,
Ash
not
was obviously
gone anymore.
As well. Ash
was obviously gone, a staple of Dapba, and then it was like something about the personality of this place is evaporated now, and it doesn't feel right.
Plus, you don't work there anymore, so it's. So what's going to make any sense anyway? There's only so many ways that you can go to Tampa. But yeah, we'll be getting some lovely food. We'll be getting some lovely pints. In terms of games that you'd enjoy that you can't recommend to others, do you guys have anything that jumps off the page for that?
What do you mean it can't recommend? I mean, like, I've bashed on about every game under the sun. I still, like, maintain that Valkyrie Chronicles is one of the best made games, but I know that most people in the office won't play it, but that won't stop me.
That could be one of yours, because like, I guess that has such a unique, like, it's not necessarily, it is turn-based, but you're also, like, moving your dudes to a specific spot and then, like, ending your turn or whatever. I guess it's something like that where you can't just go, you need to play this. Like, I feel like I give, like, you know, you can give someone a game and then be like, oh, okay, but it's, you play as this guy for 10 hours and then this happens or whatever. Like, I feel like it has to have that sort of extra level of information.
That was exactly my mate Liam trying to recommend Final Fantasy 13 to me. He was like, look, it gets good about 13 hours in when the game opens up, and I'm like, listen to yourself. You need help. You need help, man. No one should have like Stockholm syndrome from a game. But he was clearly just like, I keep playing, and well, the corridors like don't stop. And then they, it does open up. It's a great game. And I was like, no, it's just less bad.
You've
like,
Stockholm syndrome to yourself at that point, because it has to be good after 13 hours of investment. But I think that for me, I don't like how much turn-based combat has become this thing that you've got to like point out to someone. It's gonna have turn-based combat, so just put up with that and you'll enjoy the rest of it.
Turn-based combat's fun.
Well, I know, but he doesn't get it, does he?
Oh,
Josh,
are you not a fan of turn-based? I like this.
Oh, this wasn't directed at Josh. No, I just mean in general that turn-based...
Feels like it is now, fellas. I mean, I'm in the middle of it.
We've queued up our ATB gauges. Yeah.
The door is locked.
I understand that reference.
I think overall, though, there is that whole thing where even when Final Fantasy was at its heyday, the late 90s when it was that string of like, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, the reason that even Final Fantasy moved away from it was that turn-based combat was this sort of, like, people just didn't like it. But I never saw that. I always loved it. And I feel like if I'm going to recommend old-school Final Fantasy to someone, or any turn-based RPG, I have to point that out. I'm like, oh, it's going to be turn-based.
Now, if we are being brutally honest, from a game design perspective...
Switch sides, Jules.
No, I'm just playing devil's advocate. Okay. Turn-based combat is a bad thing because it actually invokes downtime in the player's thing. Each battle can shoots upwards in terms of how much time it takes to get through, and if you're going through random encounters on top of that, you're then populating your game with a lot of time that is spent technically playing but not. You're kind of resenting it if the same battle plays out the exact same way over and over again. So I can understand why a lot of them have moved away from that into more of like an active like battling system, like your Final Fantasy 14s and the 7 remake.
I was going to say the 7 remake is perfect.
I hit a perfect stride. However, I do think that there are some games, like I super enjoyed Persona 5's approach to it because of using the weaknesses and stuff like that. It was super fast with the tag team battles and stuff like that. There are ways to make turn-based battle systems fun and engaging, but a lot of it requires looking at it and going, let's take the concept and add unique elements on top of it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing is, like, in terms of like subject matter, I feel like I would recommend like Celeste or something that like I got a lot out of, and that is like, I would say like a 5-star game or whatever, something like The Last of Us, but I feel like they always come with like, but I'm not recommending you this as like a fun, nice afternoon. Like this is you have to sit down and really engage with this. So I think I would agree, like you said, that if you like something enough, you're going to explain why it's worth playing anyway.
Yeah.
So it's I've never not recommended something because only I like it. I feel like there's always a way for me to go, this is why I love it. And I think that these are universal elements and whatever.
I always like to add caveats to this because there are a bunch of games that I've played that I loved, but I would never ask Scott specifically to play because I just know like the antithesis of some of the game design tropes that you like. For instance, the Sinking City is the one that I always shout out for this. Kind of like detective.
I loved that.
Lovecraft
that's
game.
By the Sherlock people.
Yes, it is. But it was like, especially when it first came out, there was so many bugs and there was so
rough. Were there bugs.
And it was like, I could like push through a lot of that stuff, but you know, I couldn't give it to someone and say, push through this because there's an all right game at the end.
Bugs and performance is really worth highlighting. Yeah.
Did I ever tell you that I managed to get my boat back to the starting area by going through a wall and the game auto saved? And I couldn't get out of that. I had to start a brand new... Anyway, that's a completely different story.
Speaking of bugs, Cult of the Lamb, just spread the word that name needs a patch on Switch. I'm at the end of that game, and all my followers are just stuck. They don't move anymore. So none of the meters can get filled. Nothing on the work can get done. I can go into a dungeon, but it hard crashes. Like, I'm just... Apparently, the end of that game, everyone's talking about, like, the whole fandom is talking about the fact that the end of that game just falls apart. I'm just saying, that game needs patching.
Sorry, Josh.
It's all right. I do have one more, though. It's called Darkwood, and I played it a few years ago. And it's a horror game that's like top-down 2D kind of like sprite art style. And it's about you're like this dude who kind of wakes up in the middle of the woods, and it's like a survival game where during the day you have to go out, you have to like do missions, scavenge and whatnot, and then at night you have to go back to your base and essentially wait until morning and try to survive until morning in hope that your fortifications around your base kind of protect you from the ghouls trying to get in. And it's like just one of those games that's like intentionally oppressive. Like it's not fun to play, but like the atmosphere is so thick that it's good. But it's like so long and it's so punishing. And it's like one of those games you just would not recommend to anyone other than people who you know would get a kick out of like being kicked in the teeth.
I mean, I got that
20 hours. Darkest dungeon territory, is it, sort of thing.
That's stuff like that where it's like something that isn't outright fun. That whole wing of like en masse entertainment conversation that is like, oh, games are meant to be fun. I'm like, yeah. No, not really. Like, not necessarily anyway. They're meant to be engaging or hold your attention or whatever. But yeah, like some stuff like Darkest Dungeon. I got that game called The Longing where it's just spend 400 days, do whatever you want. That'll finish at some point, I think later this year. But yeah, it's just like just pass time in the game and whatever you do to pass that time, whatever your character does in that time, because you're locked in this underground cavern or whatever. I like that feel. Like that's maybe similar to the thing you were talking about the isolation and everything. But bugs and performance would be my main thing, where if I'm going to go, you should play this, there's always that part of me that goes, but it isn't perfect yet. Yeah. You might get a bug, you might get glitches or whatever.
I know you had a different experience with this, Jules, because you play it on PC, but like Cyberpunk 2077, man. Like
The Cyberpunk tale. good times.
Like, I enjoyed that, was playing it for 8 hours a day, but no way were we like recommending that in videos to people.
No.
Like when we were doing the news.
There's so many podcasts passing that out.
100%. Yeah. And it was such a difficult thing to do, because I remember me and you, Scott, we were like, it's a great game at its core. Mm-hmm. You have to put up with so much stuff, and it's hard crashing every 30 minutes, and it wasn't an enjoyable thing to experience in that form. But because I had it, I wanted to get the most out of it. It's kind of like that weird thing.
I still put like 120 odd hours into that thing, and it crashed every sort of 20, 25 minutes, but that was like a testament to how much I loved that thing that I just kept going with it.
I feel like Cyberpunk is the, Cyberpunk is a great game, asterisk, but like that's it, that's it. Yeah, like it will have big stink lines around it.
Yeah,
sometimes.
I think it's
like,
thankfully now it's finally got there, but that like initial launch thing where the consoles were absolutely on fire, PC was totally fine.
I still like, can't believe that, man, because it's like, you know, you reviewed it in a bubble and then had it on a PC with a branch that was working specifically for my PC that was given to me by the developers, and it was never made clear that it was like, this isn't the version that's going out then. You're like, oh, cool. That's a bit weird.
Actually, that's almost 2 years ago. But yeah, that was like one of the first like big, well, that was one of the biggest F-ups of the whole pandemic era or whatever. It was just getting everything wrong. But yeah, in terms of questions and stuff, I've moved my questions around as I blab. Anyway, next question.
We're on question three now, aren't we?
I think, are we managed to do three?
Three?
This is four.
Come on, we can hit the five, the golden five.
We can nail it.
Or as we say in Welsh, Een Dau Tri Pedwar Pimp.
Of course. I saw you tweet.
I trust you on that. Hopefully, you've not said anything.
He's just put a curse on us. I don't know what it is. Next question from AJ, who says, which is better, Dragon Age series or the Mass Effect series? Just started playing Dragon Age for the first time.
3, 2, 1, and I'll say it at the same time.
Yep. Okay.
So, go on 4. 3, 2, 1, Mass Effect.
Clearly, always. To be fair, I've only played Dragon Age Inquisition. I have the first Dragon Age, but I came to it way too late, and then it just didn't click with me, and I get that that's sacrilege or blasphemous to a lot of people because Dragon Age is their BioWare game. But for me, I just didn't spend enough time in that IP. I did really like Inquisition, but at the same time, that's probably just because 2014 was such an empty tire fire of a year anyway in regards to the game.
Have you noticed that the Dragon Age trilogy, the franchise, and the Mass Effect franchise, they actually have similar like trajectories? Like the first game comes out, fantastic idea and take on the tropes and the genres, creates these brand new worlds with really memorable characters, but it's hampered sometimes by its own action and gets in its own way quite a lot with just like, here's the fun, but in order to get the most fun out of it, you're gonna have to work around some pretty odd mechanics. Like, I remember Mass Effect 1 shooting was quite bad for how much it was relied upon.
I love the grenade
button.
Everything
else pulled you in. But then it goes,
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Two, the action ramps up. The characters are there. The kind of like the setting, the enemies, you really feel engaged and there's a genuine sense of threat and terror. And then three comes along and it's like the tentpole flagship cinematic experience. It's the Marvel Avengers approach where it's like big, bombastic, all the money's gone into it. But once you kind of scrape the surface, you're like, where's the actual like source to it? Like, I'm biting into that Pizza Hut dry dough. Where's my topping?
Talking about synthetic products. Yeah, the way Mass Effect 3 came together in the Legendary Edition, I didn't even finish Mass Effect 3. I finished it before, back in 2012, but I hate Mass Effect 3 so much. Really? And like playing them in a row only highlighted so much more how much worse 3 is. I even had a weird thing with going back through 1 and then 2 where I found that I just drastically prefer 1, and that definitely didn't used to be the case. But I love how much more open-ended 1 is and how much more Star Trek-y it is. Yep. And you have all the variety of planets that you're going to, whereas like 2 kind of felt like, and it totally worked for the time and it's a great game, but I just like, you know, 2 is more streamlined and it's like you're plugging in little side stories, and I like the setup and everything, but there's just something about how expansive 1 feels, and you are a Spectre. You're like this human in amongst all these alien races trying to prove humanity's worth or whatever. I just love that whole thing. It felt more like spacefaring than 2 did. 2 is like a much smaller character story, which is great, but I do love what Mass Effect is. Josh, any thoughts on Dragon Age versus Mass Effect?
Mass Effect through and through, right? But what I love almost more than anything in this world in terms of video game discourse is talking to someone who loves Dragon Age Origins, man, because the people who love Dragon Age Origins love Dragon Age Origins, and I love talking to them about it, because in the same way that I could talk about Mass Effect 1 forever in terms of its lore, in terms of its characters, in terms of the richness of that world, they can do that for Origins, and I always wish I could get that and make that leap and get there as well, and I could appreciate it. But for me, I prefer sci-fi anyway, so that Mass Effect's already got that going for it. But I just love that people who are into Origins just like, you know, have such a passion for it, and it's like that's the reason why that franchise has sustained itself for so long.
It's the same vibe you get from people who will fight tooth and nail for everyone to play Minerva's Den DLC for Bioshock 2. Yeah. It's just like, you go there, and even if you critique it slightly, it's like, but I will take, here is my TED talk explaining why you are wrong and I hate you. It's
like, I kind of feel that for the Lair of the Shadow Broker as well. Like, I love that DLC, but it's like some stuff just has that, like, oh my God, lads, like this was transcendent or whatever when they first experienced it. But yeah, Mass Effect, I think, especially over time, other than Mass Effect 3, is kind of held up a lot more than Dragon Age is, but I guess we'll see what happens with the reboots of both of them or whatever those next installments are. Next question from the legend of Matt, who says, my 3 favorite game genies are back. Big love and cheers to
love
all
my
of
land,
you.
Baby.
Thank you very much. Which gaming franchise would you give an XCOM makeover to? Personally, I'd love to see those sort of tactics applied to Mass Effect. Stay safe, all you kings. Well, thank you very much.
The table has just rocked over because my giddy
you put that away, Jules Gill.
I tell you what. So take any
Mass Effect turn-based XCOM game.
Bro, just saying, Dynasty Warriors came close to it with Dynasty Warriors Tactics. If they could turn that into a squad-based thing, I would love that. Apply it to Star Trek. Imagine like your entire bridge crew going down and doing a turn-based thing like that. And, like, you could do Disney characters with that and turn the new Kingdom Hearts into a, like, a turn-based tactical thing. Like, it applies to everything.
Love grid-based. I love turn-based stuff anyway. Give me grid-based, squad-based tactics games where you can set up like pincer movements and everything's on high and it's like snipers 10 miles away but they can get the headshot because they're higher up. I love all that stuff. Josh, you've not played one of these, have you?
I've played some. I played XCOM. I know what XCOM is. I know what that is. Yeah, I would go, though, if I had to adapt one thing into the XCOM format, Small Soldiers. Remember that film?
Oh, yeah.
That had a really good PlayStation 1 game.
That game had the best multiplayer of the PS1 era, you might say.
Bloody
this side of Crash Bash.
You know what? Yes, I would agree with that.
I absolutely love Small Soldiers.
Top 2, Crash Bash, Small Soldiers. Yeah. And I think you could have the two factions and work an XCOM formula around it. That's my
Small Soldiers, just to talk about that game on PS1 for a bit, because that predated almost every other third-person deathmatch mode. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I mean, in my mind, it plays a lot better than I'm sure it did. But I used to rent that game from a local store back in the day and just beg my friends to play with me because we could do one-on-one. It was split-screen, but it was deathmatch. And like I'd never played anything like that before, third-person weapon combat or whatever. Just a shout-out to that game. That thing was an absolute gem back in the day. I think that the XCOM overall formula, I feel like a lot of tactics series are now doing this, like Octopath Traveler, Daggerfield Chronicles.
Midnight Suns one is finally accepted. Yes. That it is XCOM meets Marvel Avengers.
I know like that thing didn't go down that well, but like I have hope that
it's Fire Access.
It's still Fire Access.
They're going to make a good game. It's just how much microtransaction stuff is then bollocked on top of it.
And everything's like random. You're dealing from a deck of cards for your moves, which could screw you over.
I actually don't mind card-based stuff like that, but I do feel like they should approach it from how, what's that new game that came out? Neo Genesis Noir or whatever it's called?
The one you like.
It's the first person shooting game.
What, Neon White?
That's the one I mean. Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know what game I just made up.
prequel.
If they could do it so that you picked up the cards on the battlefield so you knew that there was an attack format that you could do, that would actually make
like
prior,
yeah, I'm going to send a guy this way to make sure I get this attack.
Like getting a bad hand and then just being like, well, I'm screwed and I'm going to lose a character on a permadeath game, that would suck. But if there's stuff, elements on the map that you pick up so you know at least you can do these moves, then
that'd be cool. Because I recently started playing Inscription as well, which is a lot of people's game of the year last year. I was only on PC, but now it's on PS5 and everything. And that game is like a narrative based version of turn-based stuff where like your character like becomes a card and then they're trapped and you play as someone else who's now in the same room playing a new game against this mysterious stranger.
Cool.
But the person who just died is your card that you're now dealing. So like you're trying to get everyone out of this scenario. But that's got like a really cool sort of spin on turn-based combat stuff or card-based combat stuff. And I guess each encounter is more like a puzzle.
For those that are looking forward to new tactic games that are in the XCOM style, Metal Slug Tactics is coming out fairly soon, I'm pretty
sure. There's, that game looks gorgeous as well.
Oh, the art style is phenomenal. Are you familiar with the Metal Slug games at all?
Not very at all.
We should play, if they've got it at the bar that we go to on Wednesday, what's it called NQ64?
Yeah, NQ64 in Newcastle.
If we can go there and they've got the Metal Slug games there, we'll play it, man, because it's like Contra, the two side-scrolling things, but there's just so much blood and gore and bullets everywhere. It's just like pure chaos.
When they announced Metal Slug Tactics, it was like no one was asking for this, but this is a perfect fit.
I was just like, oh my god, two of my most niche franchises had a baby. Yay!
It seems like it'll do well. But in terms of XCOM crossovers, just everything. Yeah. Just put it on literally everything. Mass Effect is a
I am
hell of
bred
a
next to put it in there. Let's go. Untitled Goose Game as a XCOM thing. Imagine that.
Yeah, that would work.
More animal shenanigans games, I would take. Next question from Brandon Bressman, who says, why does no one talk about how great Dark Cloud is? I never had a PlayStation 2 to play it when it came out, but it's fun. It has a lot of unique mechanics. Now, I'll very quickly say that Dark Cloud is in our PS5 review because I was playing that game as my thing to test on the PS5's backwards compatibility stuff.
Oh, really?
And you can get Dark Cloud on PS4. It's been re-released. Dark Cloud is in our PS5 review because I was playing through it when the PS5 came out.
Have you played Dark Cloud?
As I frantically Google
it. I'll give you a little like synopsis.
It was a PS2 launch.
I reckon that my explanation of it will make you want to play that more than anything.
I love Dark Cloud.
So it's like, imagine if Legend of Zelda, right? Yes. So you take that, had a town building management system dungeon crawling thing added on. So you go into dungeons, you defeat enemies, you get resources for your town, and then you get to plonk them into 3D spaces and rebuild the town and populate it with villagers who then give you like discounts and special quests based on their requests.
It is
phenomenal.
Hey, it's been a long time since this guy's whispered sweet nothings to my ear in person, isn't it?
His love language is Dark Cloud. But also that game back in the day, back in 2000 when it was being shown off for the PS2, had this whole thing, which is still, I think, still impressive now, where you're in the building menu, so it's like top down and you're just placing units or whatever, and you can hit a button and it just zooms in and renders the whole thing, so you just zoom like Google Earth style.
It's
crazy. Just drop into your village and then all the lights come on and everything's all around you. It's really cool. No one talks about Dark Cloud anywhere near enough, or Dark Chronicle,
and that's available on the PS5
game.
And you can get Dark Chronicle as well, I'm pretty sure, which I personally would argue you start with because you don't need any prior knowledge from the first game other than
they're very different.
There's a few elements that maybe cross over, like the land names and stuff like that, but it looks nicer because it's got a really nice cel-shaded graphic style, and they worked out a few of the bugs with the combat, because the combat can be a bit samey because you just go
you're done. It's very like the original Dark Cloud is like one of the Like, it's so early. Yeah, like, yeah. It's
for the time that it came out. Yeah. Like, if they had just released a basic, like, 3D Legend of Zelda spin-off style thing, it would have done really well because everyone was clamoring just for new games on the PS2.
Yeah.
But the fact they added in this incredibly in-depth, like, town management system, you're like, Animal Crossing and Legend of Zelda smashing up. Let's go.
It was lush. The other half of that question was also a controversial food opinion is that cake is way too sweet and overrated. Only way I can eat chocolate cake is in a bowl with milk. Breathe that in, Jules Gill.
You've turned cake into a cereal? Like, this is a new one.
Put it on top of a pint and maybe we'll talk, but I don't think in a bowl.
Eating it
that
with
would work.
Milk? What?
I don't, I mean, I guess I can't.
You've broken me, man.
I don't. Have you, would you have a bowl of cake?
I wouldn't say no to it, but I wouldn't also ask for it.
Like. No.
Okay, right. I have a pitch. I have a pitch to you guys right now here live on this show. What if we, at some point in the future, when I'm next back up, we ask people for their weird food takes and we film us eating, trying all of them.
We give them
the rating, the official What Culture seal of approval.
It's in the archive when we had that weird pint of
That was a different time. And
yeah! Sours and biscuits, that was also your idea.
I still feel bad about that one because it's like, there's a bit of times where the bant goes a little too far and you make your friends drink pickled eggs, Oreos, bourbon biscuits, milk,
apple sours,
and, and like pickle juice on top of that, and it combines to make a concoction with the. It kind of looked like if scrambled eggs was made by the devil.
It was very green.
Devil eggs. Yeah. It was pretty bad for all involved. And,
Devil's video.
I think in the next challenges, I should also try my own poison, as it were.
You
the
really
only
should.
Issue with that was that it was Scott and I who had to drink this concoction.
Aye.
And Scott likes pickled stuff, which was the
big vinegar.
Stickler.
He was, you
know, I downed it.
Pickler for a stickler, isn't it?
I'm loving it, but I mean, I can channel that student mentality enough and down the thing that's in front of me. Hashtag down that fresher, not a hashtag, but you know what I mean. I can do that. Whereas now, that life is a long time ago. Right. I know it's only like 4 years ago, but still, I don't know if I could do that now.
So, I mean, this is the thing. I was saying to Cleary the other day, like the moment that you hit 30, like your knees go a bit funny, your tummy gets a bit dicky. Like,
wake up with an ache.
Like, you just can't eat and bounce back from stuff as you want to eat anymore. It's like, oh, I'll have a slice of pizza, please. The image alone will give you a bit of heartburn. It's just like, oh, that's a shame.
Just a sniff of alcohol.
Your body just goes into like, you know those... enemies in Psychonauts, they have the sensor stamps and they just go, now, it's literally them, but all in my tummy.
I just wake up in a, with aches and I'm like, why is my subconscious body put me in this position? Like, what are you doing, body?
You're meant to protect me.
The first time I got heartburn, I thought I was dying. I was out at Rise, funnily enough. Ooh. And you know the fire buckets that you get in Rise?
Oh, yeah.
Which is like, it's just a recipe for the worst heartburn.
Literal bucket.
Honestly, they should call them the fire holes because of the next morning.
Yeah, they should. I remember drinking one of those and then suddenly the heartburn descended. Ooh. And I was going to my girlfriend. I was like, I'm going to have to go. And I was, we ended up going and I was like, laid in bed with the hand on my tummy and I was going, is this normal?
Yeah, like what?
Is it normal?
Because when it's the first time that happens to you, you've got no explanation. No. There's no sort of like general studies GCSE exam that's going to say like, if you have heartburn, take yourself a Rennie and get to bed. Like,
in like, even though indigestion, heartburn is like, you know, it's a common thing people talk about. Mm. No one describes what it feels like and no one can accurately describe what it feels like.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Especially in the middle of a club scenario where you've just got to get the hell out, which is the evacuating plan.
I just like the image of Josh Brown still dancing as he's going like, I don't feel very well. I think I might have to go.
I love this song though. Next question from Tom Abbey. Seeing as we all love playing From Software games, in our opinion, which is the most difficult? Also, what's the hardest non-From Software game that we've each played?
Ooh,
the hardest FromSoft game? It depends if we're going to go down like cheapness or like things that they've patched.
Surely one of the we're going to do deep pulls. What did they do before Dark Souls? They did
Kingsfield. Yeah. If you go back,
those games are genuinely broken. I don't know if you guys because I included one of their Kingsfield games on a list of like games that just kill you for the lols sort of thing.
Yes.
And in the first 10 seconds of one of them, you are presented with a big scary door to your left, and on your right, a nice little green herb. And everyone knows that if you see a green herb, you go and pick it up, because obviously that's health. You walk two steps over to the right there, you fall through a floor into lava and instantly die. That is such a troll moment for the game. And it's like, and this was back in the day where a death wasn't as simple like, oh, restart. It was like, back to the main menu, load the thing.
It is a miracle that anyone got through those games. Like, I mean, I've not played Kingsfield, but I've seen people play it. Like, it is like a first-person Dark Souls before they... Because I feel like in Elden Ring, that was the first time that Miyazaki and From Software kind of just acknowledged that they don't need to be dicks all the time. Like, they can give you the summon ashes, and they can sort of bake those ways of getting through the game into the game itself, rather than just overcome the cheapness that we've put in front of you. But all their earlier stuff is way more just dickish, just absolutely screwing you over.
Do you think that that was like a time where Hideo Kojima and Miyazaki and Yoko Taro just met like a secret cabal, and they were just
the
kind
hood's
of...
On.
Yeah, the hood's on. It's like, we will be dicks to gamers.
It's like, what have you done this week? Well, you know, I put a herb there and there's a trapdoor and everything else.
Good.
And Miyazaki's like, I've got a treasure chest, but it's got fangs and it's going to bite the guy. And it's just like, yeah, sure. But yeah, I think the hottest FromSoft game, obviously a lot of people are going to be assuming it's post-Kingsfield. I guess you can pick older stuff if you want.
Yeah, we'll go for the Dark Souls onwards.
Like Demons onwards, 2009 onwards. What's the one that gave you the most trouble?
I think if you've played any Dark Souls game or any From Software game, Sekiro is the hardest, because that game demands you unlearn everything you've learned from Dark Souls, Bloodborne, even Elden Ring.
It also asks the most of your reflexes as
100%.
Well.
100%. It plays the most different, and it's the game that streamlines all of that help you mentioned there, Scott. Mm. Streamlines it out of the game. Like, I think it's the only one that you need, like, proper reflexes to complete. Like, you can't get through that game with aids like magic or summoning or anything. All of that stuff's gone, and it's literally you, a sword, some prosthetic tools, and these piss hard bosses. And
some of them are such jokers as well, aren't they?
Take forever, all of those different phases in the fights. It was the hardest one for me.
That game, especially towards the end when you do the final Ginoshiro fight, I remember just thinking, like, is there going to be a limit to how fast that you could code a video game? That is like the absolute apex of what we're able to do as humans. Like, it's not that Sekiro is that, but to me, there was a point where I was like, I wonder if we'll get there. Like, how much can you push the timing windows for bosses? How much can you push the ability to stay right on the money, like right in the pocket of keeping up with the boss? Because that kind of Shiro fight, obviously a lot of people use the cheese method where you just run away from him for so long.
That's what I did, baby.
You said you did. And whereas I just learned everything. But like, that was just my life for like 2 days or whatever. And then when you finally get it down, you beat him in like 5 minutes. But like, Cuphead and Sekiro are both like, learn entire chunks of stuff and then stay in the pocket for the entire game. Yeah. I just wonder if we'll ever get to that point. I would second Sekiro. That was the one where like, my heart was going so much that I was like, is this gonna kill me? Like, I don't know.
I would say that I personally found Sekiro a fairly tough, but I managed to get through it because
you flew through the demo thing.
Well, I was just in the zone. With that game, I just had a really great time, and I remember I was lucky enough to get it like a week or two before launch for the review, and I just was just, that was my entire gimmick there. I came in after completing and I was like, that's the best game I've had. Such a great time with it, fantastic. And then when everyone else was going, how did you get through this? I was like, I don't remember, but I do remember not going to bed until about 1 o'clock every single morning because it was that tough.
The thing is as well, once you've been through it, all those timings are in you. I've been back to Sekiro when they did the 60 FPS patch on PS5. I'm like Neo at the end of the Matrix. It's like, yeah, whatever. Like, it's fine. And just blew through it again.
So for me, my choice of the hardest FromSoft one would be when they just messed around with Dark Souls 2. Like, I know there's a weird sort of community that's coming out now that are like, Dark Souls 2 is actually the best game. It's like, no, you're just doing that thing that every single fan base does it, man. Like, it's seriously, what happens is, a game comes out, gets slated, the fans don't even like it, the game designer even apologizes for it, you get all these things of just like, no, it's a bad game, and then somebody just goes, but was it though? And everyone goes, because it's the counter argument. You want to be in the minority to be feel like the cool kids walking around the water cooler.
Slinging bats.
I don't want to be that guy, but I'm going to add to you. I really do. I've been waiting all podcast.
Do it.
All I'll say is Dark Souls 2, not the best game. Mm. Better than Dark Souls 3, though.
What are you saying?
It is.
Josh, boy. No, state your claim.
I would just say Dark Souls 2, the way it changes the gameplay is very welcome, and it has more imagination than Dark Souls 3 in terms of its world and its story and its lore and a sense of place. You know, I like Dark Souls 3 a lot, but it doesn't have that special X factor that I think, and ambition that I think Dark Souls 2 has, even if Dark Souls 2 has some negatives.
One of the reasons I love Mr. Josh Brown is that when he explains himself, I get it. I know what you mean. Yeah. Dark Souls 3 is the first time that that studio played it safe. And I think it's a better game. I still think it's a better game, but I know exactly what you mean.
Mechanically, I would say that Dark Souls 3 is superior in terms of your environments and newness of the settings and stuff like that. There was nothing in Dark Souls 3 that I can honestly say I hadn't seen before in the prior games. Mm. Like, it's like, oh, it's a ruined castle. Oh, it's a blah, blah, blah.
The poison swamp.
Yeah. But the mechanics of Dark Souls 2, some of them were excruciatingly annoying.
Yes.
For every good moment, like having the lifestone gems regenerate health over a slow period of time, which I love the tension that builds, you get enemies that track you near 360 degrees when they locked on. Yeah. And those bloody turtle knights, man. Like, the level design, I would say, suffered because they were just like, here's a small corridor, let's just plonk an enemy that takes up the entire width of that corridor for no reason. Mm-hmm. And it highlights how enemies don't get clipped by walls, but you do. And that really infuriates me because you're not playing on a fair playing ground.
Mm. Like, you would like clang off one of the walls and they wouldn't. Or they'd hit you through a wall.
And, and I'm always a bit like, okay, I love a challenge and I love when From Software are a bit like cheeky, but sometimes they just take the absolute piss with them because it's like, if you're going to instigate a rule for this thing, don't make me have to fight against it just to make this scenario more difficult. Mm-hmm. And the less said about those DLC packs where they just were just like, oh, they bought enough Dark Souls 2 copies, lads. Let's just put all the enemies in. Let's make them invisible. Like, oh, the invisible bloody lions or dog. Oh, ooh.
I will say the what's it called? Something like
Dark Side.
I think it's like the desecrated snowfield or something. Or is that the Elden Ring one? In Dark Souls 2, the DLC, I know what you mean. Like, one of the worst areas ever. However, those DLCs, apart from that, unbelievably good.
Lore-wise, pretty good. The boss battles were the best, but getting to those boss battles was the worst.
We were wondering what we're going to do if we have time to film a chatty face. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's just, we just call it Dark Souls 2 full stop and we just do this.
Yeah, we just
for 10 minutes.
Just turn that camera on that's facing us right now. We'll record this at the same time.
We will potentially revisit this in the future as some sort of controversial games conversation if we have time. Next question from Messed Up Aaron. If the What Culture staff were all WWE-style wrestlers, who would everyone be? Would I, Scott, be a heel? Is Josh the plucky underdog like Daniel Bryant? Is Ash Millman the Undertaker?
Well,
she's dead and gone, so I suppose.
She has been buried. Why would Ash be the Undertaker? Is it because she takes ages to get ready and her walking speed is incredibly slow?
The walking speed is probably spot on.
She does love a gong as well. Like bong!
A grand entrance. And flames.
Also adept at burying people, I will say that.
I would say that if we are to give Ash Millman a WWE star character, she is the Seth Rollins of this because of the flame
trousers.
His new
glow up.
Like, you should have seen him at Clash of the Castle. He came down full on the Welsh Dragon attire. So we had like really cheap knockoff like angel wings that were in red, and I was like, this is terrible and I love it.
That's
her fashion style. So
It's like her final evolution or something, like a final stage. I'm gonna stretch out WWE to AEW because I don't know WWE wrestlers whatsoever. Who would Josh's hook?
Just because you're beautiful.
Just because he's effective.
Yeah, but Hawk. Hook doesn't say much. That's the problem.
No, it's
Whereas
true.
Whereas Josh is like, he's a bit of a schmoozer on the microphone.
Hook does love crisps, though.
Does he?
He's coming in.
Yeah.
He's loving the crisp packets. I don't have that many go-tos for this. Would I be a heel probably?
No. You wouldn't be a heel. You're the you're definitely a baby face.
Okay. When we did the quizzes, I played a heel version of myself.
You did.
I did. I didn't like it. I felt too bad after that.
The thing is that you work hard. You're an incredible worker and you've always got good ideas.
Not a job.
You always try and promote other people. So I would say you're maybe the Bret Hart of the company. You're just basically elevating talent left, right,
and center. Am I QT Marshall?
You can be QT Marshall.
Putting people over. Josh is Dante Martin or whoever he was just up against. Yeah.
I'm just thinking, who would Josh be? Because he's got to be... my takes for WWE stuff, I usually go like old school ones because they're more like caricature style things. Mm-hmm. And that's... I kind of like the over-the-top silliness.
Yeah.
Maybe like you could be Rick the Model Martel. That sort of just like beautiful, like sort of like that, or like ravishing Rick Rude with the
Who's that guy? He's eating apple.
Oh, Carlito. I spit in people's faces. Like,
with the
cool
shirts.
I spit in the face of people who aren't cool. That is literally his gimmick.
That's festival, Josh. Nah, he's noshing the apples.
Darby Allin.
He flies in when you need him.
He's a cool guy. He's a skateboarder. Yeah. He's got that hardcore aesthetic lifestyle.
He jumps in back first and he makes it work.
Coffin dropping.
Makes it work.
I'm going to hope all of this is really good and complimentary.
It's a good time.
I have no idea who I would be. I would like to think of myself like in the ideal world, like the Neo Matrix style thing of your ideal self. I want to be like the Goldbergs. I want to be the Stone Cold Steve Austins because they're bold and just talk a lot of crap. But in reality, I'm probably more Gilberg, like the actual tiny man who pretended to be Goldberg. And he was like,
but supporting the gang.
I think today you've proven yourself as a Goldberg-esque figure because you're not around all the time in terms of the office. You come in for the big pay-per-view events.
You dominate.
And then you just smash the living hell out of the content. You know what I mean?
Walk away champion. I'll see you in 3 months. Yeah.
Just delivers a fantastic spear.
Fantastic.
We're going to wrap here because we've gone on for a long time, but we'll do more of these podcasts whenever we can. We never know when we're going to be doing sponsored stuff and Jules is up north, so we'll do what we can. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gale.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, fellas.
A massive thank you to everybody for sending in their questions, and we'll catch you all next week.
Bye.
Goodbye. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.